Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Well, Happy New Year. Good morning. Glad you guys are here. If you're a guest today, my name's Trey. I'm the lead pastor here. Thanks for joining us in the room. Thanks for joining us online. January 2nd, man, 2022. Sorry, I'm told it's just 22 now. Did you know this? Don't say 20 anymore or Eric Colquitt will hit you. That's his new mission. I'm surprised he didn't mention it on the stage this morning. Hey, really glad you guys are here. Proud of you. Because, I mean, January 1st was just yesterday. It was New Year's. You could have easily said, you know what, I'll go next week. But you didn't. You decided to start your year off right. You joined us online, did the same thing. Proud of you guys. I'm curious. I know some of you probably did create some New Year's resolutions this year. It's New Year. It's kind of common. Everybody kind of does it. It's a natural time to sort of reset, rethink about things. And so we decided to go a little different. That's why we called our series New Year's Revolution. Because resolutions, they're a list of things, you know, small things that we might can change and make some small differences. But a revolution, man, a revolution can change everything. In fact, here's how we're defining revolution for this entire series. Revolution is a dramatic and wide-reaching change in the way something works or is organized in our lives. Now, we are all living in currently and have experienced the results of some massive revolutions. None of us were there, but we are all living in light of the change that came about because of the American Revolution. A group of men decided to change the way things were organized. They decided, you know what? I don't think we should be led by that king across the sea anymore. I think we're going to take over and we're going to found a new country. We're all living in a world that has been shaped by the Industrial Revolution. Late 1700s, early 1800s, people began to think, you know, all these jobs we're doing with our hands might be faster if we created some machines to do them. And the world's never been the same. Most of us now have experienced, especially if you're my age or older, have experienced the Digital Revolution. Our kids have no idea that phones used to be attached to walls, and we made phone calls on them. What a novel concept. But now we have devices that we carry in our phones where we can talk to other people, we can order food, we can pay bills. Like, it's like the Jetsons has come to life. We're a part of a digital revolution. And every one of those revolutions began the same way. Someone or a group of people decided, hey, what if it doesn't have to be this way? What if we could make a change? And what if that change changed everything? And so what we thought it would be cool to do as we begin a new year together as a church was to ask God that question. Hey, God, what if you wanted to make a change in my life as we start this year? And what if that change affected everything? And so what we're going to do starting today for the next few weeks is we're going to talk about one subject. And it's a subject that I believe God wants to speak into our lives. And if we allow him, he wants to make a change. He wants to revolutionize our lives. He wants to revolutionize the way we live. And the promise is, when we let him do it, everything gets better. Now, what am I talking about? What are we going to talk about for the next few weeks? What is the area we're going to invite God to revolutionize in our lives? It's this. Worship. I know some of you are like, wait, I thought worship was an event. If you grew up in church, that's probably what you were taught, right? You grew up in church. We go to church. I used to go to Sunday school and then go to big church. And big church was the worship service, right? Maybe you grew up in a church that called this room the sanctuary. Maybe you grew up in a hip church and they called it the worship center. You know, we just call it that room or the auditorium. But worship can be thought of as an event. In fact, part of worship is an event. We are gathering together for what Christians call corporate worship, which is a gathering together to sing together. And here's the way the dictionary defines worship. Worship is a feeling or expression of reverence and adoration for a deity. Now, for our purposes for this series, we're going to simplify that, okay? We're going to simplify it. Worship is simply our response to what we value. See, worship is an automatic response. When we value things in our lives and they do something or something good happens, we respond in a positive way. When we value things in our lives and bad things happen, we respond in a negative way. Worship is simply our response to anything that we value in our lives. And there's one thing that's true about worship. The more we value something, the stronger our response. My family, especially my three boys, they value sports. They love sports. Danny and I just laughed because it just started the new year. It's January, which means we are about to surrender our lives to baseball for the next 5 months. That's what we do, church and baseball. And we're like, see you in May, babe, because that's what we do. But my boys, they value baseball, so they build their lives around baseball. They've actually been practicing baseball even over the winter break. And because they love baseball, they also love watching baseball, so they love the Braves. They love the Atlanta Braves. I love the Atlanta Braves. I pass that on to my kids. I thought it was a curse, didn't realize it wasn't. And so, for those of you who are baseball fans, you may know the Braves won the World Series this year. They won the World Series. And I watched it with my boys. And when they won the World Series, guys, we responded. We responded loud. And we hugged and we jumped and I probably cried. And it was just so much joy. And I literally sat them down in our den and I looked them dead in the eyes. I said, boys, savor this moment. Because we're also Gamecock fans. So I was like, savor this. I was like, because I was your age the last time the Braves won the World Series. And then they started crying. And I was like, too much. But see, I always like to talk about sports when I talk about worship because it's this universal thing. Everybody understands. If you care about sports and something good happens, you respond. And there's this picture I always like to show when I talk about worship because to me, it is one of the purest forms of worship I've ever seen in my life. It's a picture from the 2004 Masters. If you know about the Masters tournament, Phil Mickelson had never won this tournament. He'd won all the others. He'd never won this tournament. 2004, he wins the tournament by sinking a putt on 18. And there's a picture I want you to see. That is pure worship. That's also indicating poor Phil does not have what I would call much ups. He can't really, you know, Phil's like, woohoo! I mean, maybe he's working on that. But leave this picture up. I want you to see. Look, men, women, young, old, Phil, that is a response to something they valued. They were cheering for Phil. They believed in Phil. These guys had probably been sitting, to be that close to 18, they'd probably been sitting there all day long, hoping, waiting till they get to see one of those magical Augusta moments. And when they did, every one of them, hands raised high, responding because something they valued happened. And again, that's all worship is. Worship is simply our response to what we value. Now, not everybody values sports. I totally understand that. My wife, God bless her, she has to deal with sports a lot, but she doesn't really value it, doesn't really care a whole lot. You know what she loves? You wouldn't know it to look at. You know what she loves? She loves food. She really does. You're like, whatever. She does. She loves food, and she is such an amazing, she's an amazing cook, and she takes it very seriously. She values it, so she responds. Like she doesn't just make a meal. Like, she searches the internet to find the perfect ingredients, and then she'll go to three or four different stores in town to make sure she has the right ones. And when we travel, she wants to, you know, go different places and try new restaurants. She loves to read food blogs. I think if she could be anything in the world, she'd be a food critic. If she could just write a food blog, that would make her happier than anything in the entire world. So she values great food. And one of the reasons she values that is because she loves providing that for my family. She values us being able to gather around the dinner table. And so she puts time and effort and energy into it. That's really the way you know what you worship. Is where is my time? Where is my energy? Where's my effort going freely? And for many of us, it can go to many different things. It can go to our families. It can go to our careers. It can go towards our friends. It can go towards fitness. It can go towards so many different things. And I know because some of you were raised in church, and what you think I'm going to do is tell you that all those things are bad things and tell you that all those things are wrong. And I promise that's not what I'm going to tell you, because they're not. There's nothing wrong with valuing your family. There's nothing wrong with valuing your career. There's nothing wrong with valuing health. There's nothing wrong with valuing good food. There's nothing wrong with valuing sports. There's nothing wrong with any of it. The problem arises when we overvalue those things. The problem arises when we give them a higher priority in our lives than they can carry. Because the reality of worship is that the reason we are responding to these things, the reason we value these things, isn't just because of them, it's because of what we think they can give us. And when we place the things in our life too high, we ask too much of them. And they're never able to deliver. So the question I really want us to ask starting today and for the next few weeks, it isn't about do we value things, because of course we do. The question I want to ask is this: am I properly valuing everything in my life? Or are there some things that I've overvalued? And because I've overvalued some things, have I maybe undervalued some other things? And look, we can all admit, we can look back and we can see things that we overvalued. We can see jobs, we can see opportunities, maybe we can even see relationships that looking back, we would say, I put too much time, I put too much effort, I put too much energy into that relationship, that career move, that new idea, that new venture. And what do we always say when it's over? We look at ourselves in the mirror and we say, why'd I do that? It wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth the time, the energy, the effort. What you're really saying is, it wasn't worth the worship you gave it. It wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth that worship. And so, how do we begin today? How do we begin to ask the question, am I properly valuing everything in my life? Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to have an honest appraisal of our current worship. In fact, I'll go ahead and tell you right now, that's your homework assignment today. When we're done today, your homework assignment isn't, I'm not asking you to change anything today. I'm not asking you to make a big decision today. I'm asking you to simply appraise your current worship. Currently, how does your life reflect? How does the worship of your life reflect your value system? And if you want to know how to figure that out, it's very simple. Attention follows affection. Where do you naturally spend your time? What do you naturally think about? Where do you naturally want to give effort? What really makes you happy when it succeeds? What really bothers you when it fails? That's where your attention is naturally flowing. That's where your worship is naturally flowing, because that is what you naturally value the most. And we cannot begin to make any changes until we first understand what our current value system looks like. And so when you think about your daily life, when you think about what you think about, when you don't have to be thinking about work, or when you don't have to be doing something else, where does your brain naturally go? Where do you naturally want to spend your money? Where do you naturally want to give your time? What naturally satisfies you? That's how we begin to identify currently how we are valuing things. And once we've done that, then again, we can ask this question. Then we can say, okay, so am I properly valuing these things in my life? And if you're honest, that's a difficult question. Because how do we know if we're properly valuing the things in life? How do we know if we're properly valuing time with our kids versus time with our spouse versus time with our friends versus time on our career versus time in the gym and versus time planning and praying and time with God? Like how do we know if we're actually making the right decisions? Especially in real time. Especially when worship really is a response. It's not even something we can definitely control. It can get overwhelming because you have a lot of things in your life that you value, and I have a lot of things in my life that I value. So how can I ever be sure at every moment of every day that I'm properly valuing every single thing? Well, that's the entire point of this series, because it turns out that I can make one choice. And you can make one choice. And the choice revolves around who gets the top spot. And once we decide who gets that top spot in our lives, who we're going to respond to first, who we're going to value the most, who is going to lead in every single situation, once we decide that, if we decide properly, if we decide to put Jesus in that top spot, guess what? He takes care of everything else. When we give him permission to lead, he takes over the value system in our lives. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. I thought you just said that worship is a response. In fact, Trey, you said, I heard you say it, you said that attention follows affection. So how can I make a choice? This isn't a choice. This is something I'm responding to, and that's a good point. Attention does follow affection naturally. We all have natural values. We all have natural ways we operate in life. But we've also all experienced something different. We've all experienced natural attention, but we've also all experienced focused attention. There have been times, there have been moments, there have been things we've done in our lives where we have said, okay, I don't value this yet, but I'm going to intentionally focus my time, focus my effort, focus my energy on this thing. And focused attention, you know what it does? It creates affection. You know how I know this? Because every one of you in a relationship used to not like something that the other person likes, and now you do. You didn't like that band, but now you do. You didn't like that restaurant, but now you do. You didn't like that meal, but now you do. When I married Danielle, I did not like coffee. I did not drink coffee. I was not a fan of coffee. She loves coffee. So for years, we would travel, and she'd be like, let's just go get some coffee. And I'd be like, I don't want any coffee. Because I'm selfish. But then I finally decided I'm going to focus my attention on this. And I was like, okay. And I drank enough coffee to where now not only do I love it, I am probably addicted to it. So thanks, babe. But no, we've all experienced this. Focused attention creates affection. And so, not today. For the rest of this series, what we're going to do is we're going to learn some steps I can take and you can take and we can all take in our lives to focus our attention on Jesus. To reorient our lives around letting him lead. And as we focus our attention on him, our affection will be drawn to him. And before we know it, we will find that he is naturally leading our lives. And here's the amazing thing about letting Jesus lead our lives. Check this out. When Jesus is first, everything benefits. Because it turns out he's more invested than you are in you being a great friend, in you being a great spouse, in you being a great parent, in you being a great employee, in you being a great employer. He cares more than you do. And so when we decide to orient our lives around him and give him the top spot, everything gets better. Now, the opposite of this is also true. When Jesus isn't first, nothing benefits. And this is really what we're going to talk about for the rest of our time today, because we miss this. When we allow anything other than Jesus to take the top spot, it doesn't just hurt us. It hurts whatever we put in that top spot as well. Because we are asking either a human or a creation to play the role of God. And we are putting on it a weight that it cannot carry. This is why sometimes relationships crumble. Because they crumble under the weight of the expectation the other person puts on it to make me whole. To complete me. It's why we jump from career to career to career, because that career never fully and finally satisfies. Because it was never intended to. And to help you understand why I want to say that, I want to turn to a guy we turn to a ton here at our church, a guy named Paul. Because Paul had an opportunity to talk to some people who were very aware of their worship, who were very aware of making sure they worshiped the right things. And he was able to speak directly to them to explain why their worship wasn't working. Why they weren't getting that satisfaction that they were longing for and who they should redirect their worship onto. And so I want to take you to this passage. It's found in the book of Acts. And this is during one of Paul's missionary journeys where Paul would travel around to different towns that didn't know about Jesus, and he would just spend time telling people about Jesus. And eventually he would get enough people to become Christians that he would start a church, and he would appoint a pastor. And then once that church was up and running, he'd move on to a new church. And Paul had been in an area, and there was some trouble going on, so his friends sent him on to Athens. So Paul's in Athens, and he's waiting on two of his buddies, Timothy and Silas. And while Paul is in Athens, he begins to look around. And here's what the writer of Acts, Luke, the guy who wrote the book of Luke and the book of Acts. See, it only took three times to say that. Here's what he writes for us. He says, hey, while Paul was waiting for them, that's Timothy and Silas, in Athens, he was deeply troubled by all the idols he saw everywhere in the city. Now, the Athenians were known for their temples. They were known for their shrines. They wanted to make sure they didn't leave anybody out. They were very open-minded. And so they had all these temples. And Paul's walking around, and he's deeply troubled by all these temples because these temples were places where people would go to worship. And they would go to, they think in response, but they were actually going asking for something. And Paul was troubled because he knew these things that you are worshiping, these things that you are serving, are never going to be able to fully and finally satisfy the deepest longings of your soul. And so Paul, because he's in a new town, begins talking about Jesus and begins sharing about Jesus. And eventually some of the leaders of the town of Athens hear about Paul, and they hear about Jesus, and specifically they hear that he's talking about that Jesus died and came back to life. And they're like, whatever, man, nobody can do this. But the Athenians were kind of open-minded people, and so they invited Paul in to speak before the Athenian council. And Paul's like, man, I would love to have this opportunity. And Paul stands before them and delivers what I think might be the greatest single piece of argument ever given for why we should give God the top spot in our lives. Why giving him the top spot is really the only reasonable, rational choice we can make. Here's what he says. He says, so Paul, standing before the council, addressed them as follows. He says, men of Athens, he says, I notice that you're very religious in every way. For as I was walking along, I saw your many shrines. He's not fighting with them. He's like, hey, I get it. I see that you are passionate. I get that you are interested in worship, that you are trying to identify the gods in your life, and that you're taking great steps to serve them. I see that. I get that. He would say the same thing to us today. He would say, hey, I get that you're trying to evaluate the different things in your life that you're responding to, and you're trying to figure out who should be where and who should be what. Paul's like, I applaud that. I understand that. And then Paul, in an effort to connect, says one more thing. He says, and one of your altars had this inscription on it, to an unknown God. He says, this God whom you worship without knowing is the one I'm telling you about. He'd say the same thing to us. For those of us who have not given God the top spot in our lives, he would say, hey, there's been something inside of you your entire life that's known there's more out there. It's why you've never been satisfied. That longing you have in your soul for justice, that longing you have in your soul for peace, that longing you have in your soul for joy, that longing you have in your soul for unconditional love. See, you value that. And so you have responded to many different things in search of that unconditional love, in search of that never-ending peace, in search of that satisfaction. He says, it's natural that you want that. Let me tell you where you find it. Paul says, that's my God. That's the God I serve. The God who is literally the answer to all those prayers. And so the men of Athens were all like, okay, man, I'm here. Let me listen. And then Paul begins to make an argument for why his God is the only God worthy of worship. And he begins with a really great point. He is the God who made the world and everything in it. He makes a very clear distinction. There is the creator and there is creation. He says, I'm picking the creator. And he keeps going. He says, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, since he is God of all things, he doesn't live in these man-made temples, and human hands can't serve his needs, for he has no needs. Paul's saying, why would you worship something that has needs? We have needs. God invites us to worship something that needs nothing from us. In fact, Paul keeps going, he himself gives life and breath to everything. And he satisfies every need. See, these in Athens, all these temples, they had to go and they had to keep going back to appease the gods, and they had to serve the gods, and they had to feed the gods, and they had to provide for the gods. And Paul's just like, number one, that's not a god. Gods don't need anything. In fact, God gives everything. So first of all, why on earth would we spend time on these other things? When the God I'm talking about, he doesn't need anything from you. All he wants is good things for you. And to prove it, here's what he did. From one man, he created all the nations throughout the whole earth. And then watch this. He decided beforehand when they should rise and fall, and he determined their boundaries. He's like, my God is so big and so strong and so powerful. You guys think that you've been in charge this whole time. You think that you've been overseeing, you know, Greece when you were big and strong. You think you had something to do with that, and now that you're diminishing a little bit, you think it's your fault. Nope, nope, my God's been in charge of all of it. Today, he would say, you know, to us, like, man, you know, we think we're the reason for our success. We think that we're the reason this worked out. We think this is the reason that it just didn't work out. And he's like, no, man, I'm God. I'm in charge. I'm in charge of everything. I'm the one who opens the doors. I'm the one who closes the doors. And so just focus your attention and focus your affection on me, the one in charge. And I promise, I'm going to guide you through all these things because I know what's coming next and you don't. See, I know this is true because it's what Paul tells us. He says, he keeps going. He says his purpose in all this was for the nations to seek after God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Though he's not far from any of us. Why? For in him we live and move and exist. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. He's like, guys, even your own poets get this. My God is the God of everything. He is the reason we breathe. He is the reason we move. He is the reason we exist. He has done all of these things for us. And then Paul keeps going. He says, and since this is true, we shouldn't think of God as an idol designed by craftsmen from gold or silver or stone. Here's what he's saying. He's saying to the people of Athens, he's saying to the people of Wellspring, why, oh, why, oh, why would we ever give creation the top spot when we have the option of giving it to the Creator. When we have a great meal, we don't look at the food and say thank you. We praise the chef because he's the one who put it on our plate. And what Paul is saying to the Athenians and through the Athenians to us is, why, oh, why would we ever place all our hope, place our life, put everything we have in the hands of anything that's been created when we have the option of worshiping the God who created it all? And here's what he did for us. See, this God overlooked people's ignorance about these things in earlier times, but now he commands everyone everywhere to repent of their sins and turn to him. Let's keep going. For he has set a day for judging the world with justice by the man he has appointed. And he proves to everyone who this is by raising him from the dead. In other words, the God of the universe, the creator of everything, has told us who to worship. His son, the man he sent to save us, and the man that he raised from the dead. The God who created everything. The God who is in charge of everything. The God who has orchestrated everything has determined Jesus and Jesus alone, his perfect son, is worthy of worship. He is worthy of the top spot in our lives. Why? Because God said so. And we may say, well, who cares about that? Well, I understand, but we wouldn't be here if he hadn't. The same God that created me and gave me the ability to communicate, and the same God that created you, and the same God that created every desire you have, and the same God that's ever satisfied anything you've gone to him for, that same God says, hey, Jesus. Jesus gets the top spot. So, Wellspring, what if in 2022 you were to make the revolutionary choice to give Jesus the top spot, to choose to give leadership in your life to the Creator and to allow him to lead you to properly value the creation? It's a big choice, and it will require big changes. But it'll also produce better results. But I said earlier, we're not talking about changes this week. For this week, your homework assignment is simple. What is the current value system of your life? How do you know? Attention follows affection. Here's my prayer for you this week. Ask God to open your eyes to your current attention. Ask God to open your eyes to your current value system, to your current sense of worship. Have conversations about it. Talk with your spouse about it. Talk with your friends about it. Talk with your parents about it. Talk with your small group about it. Hey, when you look at my life from the outside, when you see it, what do you think is the most important thing to me? What am I valuing the most? Because only when we have a proper understanding can we begin to ask this question. Am I properly valuing everything in my life? That's where we'll pick up next week. Hopefully you'll come back with your eyes opened. You'll come back with a better understanding of what you are valuing. And here's what you may discover, man. If Jesus is already in the top spot, fantastic. Keep going. Come back next week. Invite your friends, serve with us, pray with us, and let's change the world. But if this week God's opened your eyes and you realize, you know what, no, I don't think he is. I don't think Jesus is the top spot. Then come back next week as we learn some steps we can take to focus our attention on him, build on this promise that when Jesus is first, everything benefits. Everything gets better. And I know you may not believe that yet. I know you may not be convinced of that yet. I understand that. But this is only week one. This is just the beginning of the series. This is why you just take the first step. Just evaluate. Just ask God to open your eyes. Just ask God to show you, what am I currently valuing? And then come back. If for nothing else, to try to figure out how this works. How can giving someone else actually make my life better? How can giving someone else a top spot be better for me? It's a great question. And it's one every single person in this room that's done it can tell you, man, I don't know, but it works. Because when Jesus leads me, everything gets better. I'm a better husband. I'm a better father. I'm a better leader. I'm a better friend. I'm a better man. And I don't have to spend near as much time wondering about, is this the right choice, or is this the right choice, or is this the right choice? Because Jesus, when he has control, leads us even in those decisions. But again, that's for next week, for this week. Just ask God to open your eyes. Just ask God to make it crystal clear what the current value system is in your life. And then ask this question, is it working? If it is, man, keep doing it. If it's not, if you think better is possible, then come back next week as we learn how we can focus our attention on the Creator of the universe. Let me pray for us. Oh, Heavenly Father, we love you so much. God, we're just so thankful for your Son. We're so thankful that you sent him, and we're so thankful that you invite us to place our trust in him. Father, I pray you open our eyes to our current value system. Where is our worship currently flowing? And Father, help us see, is it working or not? Father, I pray you draw our hearts to you this week. Draw our hearts and give us the desire to give you the top spot. And then bring us back next week to learn how to do it. We love you. We're so thankful for you. And so in your Son's name we pray. Amen.